Hello, everybody. This is Howie Hawkins. I was the Green Party candidate for president in 2020. And this Green Socialist podcast is about continuing to advance the program that we ran on. And I'm down in Brooklyn today at a hubbub of activity. It's the law offices of Brian Figaro. They got publications out of here, radio broadcasts, podcasts. I got interviewed for the print publication. I did a radio broadcast. And unfortunately, we got confused on a date. Brian thought I was coming down next Saturday. So he's meeting with clients right now with his legal advice. So we're going to have him on next week, if not today. But if I get a minute here, I'll just show you. If they're not busy over here. You guys, okay. Can you see that? They got these publications. Concerned Americans for Racial Equality, the Immigrants Journal, Caribbean American Weekly, and they also do Workers World Today. And I like this thing, if you can see it, how they got this thing you can set up in a meeting about how to organize a union. So there's a lot of activity going on here. And so if we have some interruptions, that's because people are coming in and out of the office. I'm like at the receptionist desk. But anyway, so that's what's going on with me down in Brooklyn today. So Brian said he'd come on, you know, like other guests have by Wi-Fi next Saturday. So sorry for that confusion. So let me say a few words about what's going on. The COP26 just ended, and some people were calling it the last chance. And I was saying, let's not do that because we're not going to get solutions, and we didn't. So we got to keep fighting for a eco-socialist global Green New Deal. When I talked about last week, you know, the fact that almost two-thirds of the carbon emissions are now in the global south. Now, a lot of those factories and are owned by U.S.-based corporations, so we import those goods back here, and that carbon is embedded in the goods that we get. So in a way, we're responsible for a lot of those emissions. But on the other hand, those big industrial countries in the global south, China, India, Vietnam, Indonesia, Brazil, South Africa, and so forth, if we don't help them get off of coal particularly, but also, you know, oil for their transportation system and natural gas for other applications, we're all going to be cooked. So we need a global Green New Deal, and it's certainly not part of Build Back Better, which keeps shrinking. And they've run away from the term Green New Deal. You know, that was something we've run on for a decade, the Green Party. It was our signature issue. And AOC and Markey took it and put their non-binding resolution into Congress. It was watered down. No ban on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure. No phase out of nuclear power. No cuts in the military budget to help pay for the Green New Deal. And then they extended the deadline for zero emissions by two decades, from 2030 to 2050. And even then, they've never voted on it. Pelosi hasn't brought it to the floor. Schumer hasn't brought it to the floor of the Senate. So they're running away from the Green New Deal. So I guess it's back with the Green Party. And, you know, that's why we need a Green Party. So I've been very busy here the last few hours. I haven't prepared a whole lot of remarks, but I guess the other thing on my mind is these two big trials going on with that Rittenhouse kid that killed two people and shot another in Kenosha, and the Ahmaud Arbery trial, where you've got judges and lawyers basically exposing how racist the whole criminal justice system is. So we're going to start having decisions on those cases, but that's a whole area where we got to have reform. You know, reforming the criminal justice, there was a George Floyd Justice Sentencing Act that the House passed. It's dead in the Senate, like a lot of stuff, like voting rights and election protection. They haven't been talking about that for weeks, but it's crucially important. I mean, the Republicans are out there in the 30 states they control, gerrymandering the hell out of districts. So like in Texas, Latinos are 40% of the population, but they're a majority in only 20% of the congressional seats, the way the Republicans have drawn the districts. Black folks are 20% of the state. They're only the majority in 10% of the districts. And Asians, about 6% of the state now, they're not the majority in any district. So they really gerrymandered it, so a minority can rule. And the Democrats in Congress, you know, they need to lift that filibuster, at least for the voting rights and election protection legislation, and they haven't. So I guess that's why we need to have the Green Party out here and keep going. So I'm ready to take your comments and questions, and we'll play it by ear. Scout Trooper 164 asks, Howie, what are your thoughts of the Greens winning more elections this year? Well, we had a unfortunately low number of candidates. I think it was less than 100. But we did maintain the fact that we have over 100, I think it's 107 is the latest count, in office. You know, Greens should tap that more. And then what we need to do is run more candidates. We have a great winning percentage because mostly we run in local races where you can go door to door and let people know what you're about. And some of these seats, you know, there's not much competition for them. A lot of times their incumbents have been sitting there doing nothing for years. We can win a lot of these. And as we build that base of local elected officials, then we're setting up the basis, the foundation for running credible runs and winning races for state assembly and the House of Representatives. And once we do that, then we're it's hard to take us out of the conversation and ignore the fact that we're running like they did in my presidential campaign in 2020. We had a delegation of Greens in the House. Be hard to ignore us, whoever our candidate was. Scout Trooper 164, what are your thoughts of Travis Scott not stopping his concert despite unsafe conditions? I haven't looked closely at that. I've heard that was the case. And I don't know if he was aware of what was going on. If he was, shame on him. If he wasn't, shame on the people that organized that concert, because from what else I've heard, they just weren't set up to deal with the situation that developed. And I know there are questions about law enforcement sort of observing what's going on without, you know, getting up there and stopping the concert and, you know, giving people instructions on how to, you know, make it safer. So, and get people from being crushed. That's about all I can tell you. I haven't, you know, followed the news in detail. It's been a busy week for me. Okay, Scott Trooper says he kept on doing music despite people yelling, stop the show. Well, if he heard that and he kept playing and performing, that was wrong. Michael Shin, Mr. Hawkins, in your experience, what is the best way to recruit active and effective long-term Green Party members? Well, the first thing is you need to have a good local organization that can bring them in and get them right to work. Too many Greens mostly just meet around business, and then they bring in new people to talk about, you know, budgets and venues for events and kind of the minutia. People get involved because they want to learn and they want to take action on the issues. So the best way to incorporate new members is to do that. Have educational forums that are, you know, interesting, so people want to come for that, and to take action and get people involved in that. And then some people will want to be involved in the administrative side, and they're valuable, and you give them the space to be part of that too. The best way to recruit, I think, is, well, two things. One is be active in the social movements so that people see the Greens are part of them. And if they're part of that social movement, they say, well, the Greens are organized, we need a new party, they'll come to you. And then as far as building a mass base for the Green Party, we got to do regular canvassing, deep canvassing, not the kind of hit and run canvassing is often done right before elections where you're just trying to find out if the voters are going to vote for you and you have a brief conversation. This is where you go out and you reach instead of preach. In other words, you go out and listen to people, let them talk about their issues. Don't preach to them that you got all the solutions. And after you've heard them out, you can relay what they said to what the Greens are offering. But what you're really doing is building a relationship, the beginning of a relationship. And people appreciate the fact that you came to their door to talk to them. And then they may see you in the news or on the street, active on the issues. And then you may go back to that door, or somebody from the party does, and they realize that we're here to stay. And then, you know, that builds the trust, because I always say the most people that don't vote are working class people, people of color, and young people. Not because they're apathetic, they're alienated because they don't trust the system. They've been disappointed or they don't see any results. So if we can build their trust and show that we're consistently active, we can bring those people in. And that would be the mass base for a party. And also the voters we need to win. Most elections, the winners are the non-voters. They have more than any candidate running for office. And we just had, off-year elections, a lot of these local elections, the turnout was pathetic in most places. And so those non-voters out there are up for grabs. That's, those are the people we need to recruit. So I'll stop there and let's take the next question. Amy L. Sachs, on Twitter, I saw a couple of Pennsylvania Greens, thankfully, arguing strongly against the line with quote-unquote populist white supremacists like Boogaloo Boys. Thoughts? Anyone? Well, yeah, I think, Jimmy Dore had one of those Boogaloo Boys on there. That is, and there are certain elements who consider themselves on the left that say, well, we got to align with the right that's against the establishment. No, they're against the establishment for different reasons. And the first people they're going to string up are us if they ever get power. And so that's not the kind of coalitions we want to build. We want to build coalitions of working people and marginalized, oppressed people so they can act and speak on their own behalf. We don't need them white supremacists, so-called populists, who are often astroturf groups that are funded in the background by very rich people. That's been true since slavery times, Reconstruction, post-Reconstruction, and still true today. You look at the money behind these white supremacists, it's people like the Koch brothers and the Mercers. So, no, I'm strongly against the line, and I'm glad the Pennsylvania Greens said the same thing. Brent J. Gill, when it comes to your Green New Deal, what is your opinion on thorium reactors? Yeah, they've been trying to make thorium reactors since World War II. It's a failed enterprise. The whole damn nuclear industry is a failed enterprise. They can't operate without subsidies. They take too long to build if you want to have carbon-free power to deal with this climate crisis. So, no, that's a dead end. We can get a lot more gigawatts from building solar and wind than we can from nuclear, whether it's thorium, traditional light water. And then they always talk about, these, what do they call them? Modular reactors, small modular reactors. Those are even less economical because you don't get the same economies of scale. So the nuclear option is a dead end. Scout Trooper 164, I really dislike that YouTube is pandering again to mainstream media by removing the dislike count and claiming it's for content creators when it's clear, I think he means corporations want max propaganda. Boy, man, that's too deep for my knowledge of the dislike count. I don't even know what that is. I generally don't tell Facebook or YouTube or anybody what my opinion is on stuff I see online. Unless it's a Green running for office that I support, and I like that, and occasionally some other things. So I don't quite understand what you're saying, that YouTube is pandering to mainstream media by removing the dislike count and claiming it's for content creators when it's clear corporations want max propaganda. Man, you're above my it's going over my head, Scout Trooper. I'm sorry. Another question from Brant J. Gill. Mr. Hawkins, what's your response to critics that say, yeah, the Greens have great policies, but they can't win? Or Republicans donate to the Green Party in hopes of votes being taken from the Democrats? Well, the second thing is, there are a few dumb Republicans that do that, but it's, a tiny fraction of our money. Most of our money comes from small contributions from regular working people. So that is a canard that the Democrats throw out there and not even really worth talking much about. Yeah, we have great policies, but we can't win. Well, the fact is we do win. We have over 100 elected officials right now. We have a great winning percentage. We should have more Greens running for particularly those local offices where we get elected. And that'll create the foundation for running for state legislatures in the House and winning. And the other thing about, if you don't vote for what you want, you're basically getting lost in the sauce, because if you're for single payer health care and you vote for, you know, me running against Biden last time, you vote for Biden, you're voting against Medicare for all. If you're for Medicare for all, you basically silenced yourself. You wasted your vote. So you don't have to win the office to deserve a vote. You should vote for the policies you want and make the politicians come to you. So that's my response to those critics. Kevin Kopic or Kopac, what made you run for president? Well, a bunch of Greens. It wasn't my idea, but I was drafted and took a couple months to convince me to do it. And so they convinced me and I did it. And, you know, of course, there were other reasons once I, you know, decided to run. One is to get, you know, real solutions to the life or death issues we face. The Green New Deal to deal with the climate change. The Economic Bill of Rights to deal with growing inequality and poverty, which is lowering life expectancies in this country. It's a life or death issue for the people that are struggling. And then the new nuclear arms race that nobody never raised between Biden and Trump or the commercial media, never talked about it. While the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists has their doomsday clock, the closest they've ever had it to midnight. So to raise the issues and then to help the Greens organize. And so that's why I'm still out here with this podcast and putting out articles and visiting places like Brooklyn. So that's what it's about. And, you know, the candidate is a vehicle for the whole movement. And just happened to be me in 2020. Eric Gray. Howie, what are your thoughts on how to get people who are normally disenchanted with politics to be engaged in it? Nothing, you know, succeeds like success, they say. When they see the Greens, or they see anybody, you know, get some results, and then they say, well, wait a minute, this can make a difference, so I don't have to be disenchanted. On the other hand, and I think we see a lot of this right now, you know, people put their hopes in Bernie and then they transferred it to Biden. And now they see the right wing of the Democratic Party vetoing what good instincts the Democrats have in all these issues, like just like they were Republicans. So people are thinking, well, with Democrats like that, who needs Republicans and why should I be involved in politics? So you can understand why people have become disenchanted. I think what we got to do is be active in our community, show people that. You know, we are speaking up. I mentioned the deep canvassing earlier. You know, talk to people. A lot of people, partly the reason they're disenchanted is the political system seems so separate from them. And, you know, their elected officials never come talk to them. If we're out there knocking on doors and listening, you know, people are thinking, well, at least somebody's listening, you know, and they'll be curious as to what we're doing. I mean, I had this one guy when I was, you know, Teamster working at UPS. We worked together for 20 years. Never could get him to register to vote, but he sure wanted to know what was going on. And his personal history, you can understand. Let me put it this way. In Syracuse, where I'm at, there are a lot of people in working class and Black communities that when they think of the government, they think cops, courts, and the police and the prisons. They don't know what a mayor is or a counselor is because they just had no contact with it. If we're out there talking to these people and explaining that, which is the basics of how the, you know, city government works, and then talk about issues, a lot of those people will then become enchanted instead of disenchanted. So anyway, the guy I worked with, you know, I'd come into work, he wasn't registered to vote, but he sure wanted to know what I thought about issues that were in the news. You know, he wanted my opinion. And so he was definitely following it. He was not apathetic. He was alienated. And I think there are a lot more folks like him that we can reach just by staying in touch with them, talking with them. And I was not successful in getting this guy registered, but most people are not as hard as him. And I think they just need some hope that it makes a difference, and then they'll get involved. Matt Ridgway, is it really possible to power the world with solar and wind power? A lot of critics say the production of these energy sources is more harmful than fossil fuels. What do you say to these critics? Well, it's not more harmful from the viewpoint of climate change. Now, solar and wind don't put up greenhouse gases. Now, if we produce them using, fossil fuels, which we'll have to do in the first part of a transition, yeah, there's going to be some greenhouse gas emissions. There are other issues. Balsa wood, for example, for the big wind generator blades. That's a very light wood, but, it's threatening forests. There's extraction of lithium, which can be a very dirty process. Lithium's concentrated outside of China in three Andean countries, Argentina, Peru, and Bolivia. And the indigenous people there don't want lithium mines on their land and destroying their water. So we got those issues. Lithium's really all over the place. It's just not concentrated. So there are other ways, more expensive, more energy intensive, to extract lithium. And then we need to upgrade our recycling. We should make manufacturers responsible for products when they're used up, which means the solar and wind manufacturers in this case. And then you return the used up product, and then they break it down and recycle the parts or reuse parts that aren't worn out. That's where we got to move to. So solar and wind can be more or less environmentally harmful depending on how it's done. But compared to fossil fuels, no, there's no comparison. I mean, fossil fuels are cooking the planet, and that's an existential crisis. It's not just heat waves and stronger storms. It's the destruction of whole agricultural regions, which will make food a problem, and then people are starving. And that's where you get climate refugees and a whole lot of conflict in a world that we don't want to get to. Dan Vegas 27, Howie, not saying this will be soon, but the Green Party was not always socialist. Do you feel that when you stop being the front of the party, that the party will stop being socialist? I'm new to the party. Well, I've been in the party from the beginning. There's always been a socialist wing. The socialist wing has got stronger to the point where now it's a majority. So if I get hit by a bus on my way out of here and killed, the party won't stop being socialist. There's a lot. That's basically what the sentiment is. People understand you can't have a capitalist system that's based on endless growth in a sustainable, on a finite planet, to have a sustainable economy. And more people understand that capitalism makes inequality worse, makes the rich richer and the poor poorer. And so if you're concerned about economic and social justice issues, capitalism is not the system. So I think that's very well rooted in the Green Party now, not universal, but certainly the majority. And as far as I'm concerned, it's the only rational solution to these problems that we're facing. Vicky Corden, Democrats seem to be weak to prosecute Republicans and extremists of January 6th failed coup. What do you think? Yeah, I think you're right. And that includes people like Merrick Garland, who's attorney general. He was slow. He's now doing a criminal contempt case against Bannon for ignoring that subpoena. And then the penalties that the prosecutors were putting forward for a lot of these people, people for disorderly conduct and other things just on the street are getting worse sentences than a lot of these people did. I guess the biggest one came out this week, a guy that is on tape, fighting the cops, hitting them with weapons. He got, 40, maybe 52 weeks, a little over 4 years. It's like we treated the Confederates. They're treasonous. Instead, now we got, monuments to them, and they all got let back into the government early because of President Andrew Johnson. We just seem to let them off easy. And that's a problem because they are organizing basically to entrench minority rule, with the sort of facade of elections, but you know what they're doing in the states. They're either getting Republicans in the Secretary of State or putting the power in the state legislatures they control to decide who won, even if they didn't, which means Republicans. And then, okay, so what are we going to do about it? I mean, they're ready to, the majority of them, according to public opinion polls, these Republicans are ready to say, you know, violence is worth doing because they think Biden stole the election, which is crazy. But you got this right-wing propaganda network, or networks, Fox, OAN, Newsmax, putting that out, the talk radio networks. So you got like a third of the country thinks Biden wasn't legitimately elected. And then they're thinking, and a lot of them have arms, that violence is justified. So we're in a serious situation. And the Democrats, I mean, damn, why can't they lift the filibuster to get the voting rights and election protection bills passed? And they haven't talked about that in months. I mean, Schumer brought the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act up, and the Republicans vetoed it. And you know, that was it. Now, they say they're going to bring it up again after they get back done with Build Back Better, but who's going to push to get the filibuster lifted? You know, Biden's been in there 10 months now, and he's dropped a couple of hints he might be open to it, but he certainly hasn't fought for it. So, you know, that's really concerning. So, yeah, I think the Democrats are weak on prosecuting these people that tried to overthrow the last damn election. And bipartisan, I mean, Biden wants to go bipartisan with the people that tried to overthrow his election. I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, they're coming to a knife fight with cupcakes. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Hidden Palm, Cease, Ajamu, Flowers, Jesse Jackson physically defended the Venezuela embassy. Black Agenda Report in the Gray Zone debunked lies about the Nicaragua election. What's your take on the Venezuelan and Nicaragua elections? Yeah, I supported, you know, Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers were part of my campaign, and we totally supported them. They basically stopped being on a campaign and working on the, you know, that embassy protection. And so we defended that. You mentioned Gray Zone and Black Agenda Report. Look, my position is the U.S. should stay out of other people's, other countries' elections. I think I agree with, you know, Gray Zone and Black Agenda Report on that. I don't have the same opinion of Noriega that they do or of Maduro. I think the left has been repressed just like the right in those countries. And I defend the right of the left. This is, in the case of Venezuela, the Communist Party and some other socialist groups that are using the Communist Party label, and they are arbitrarily being taken off the ballot for mayoral elections in cities like Caracas and about half a dozen other major cities. That's wrong. Party suppression, whether it's the Democratic Party suppressing the Green Party here, or, you know, Maduro's party suppressing the Communist Party in Venezuela, is wrong. And in the case of Nicaragua, yeah, there were six parties on the ballot. They were hardly parties. And a lot of people who are critical of Noriega, including many of his former comrades, Sandinista revolutionaries, have that same opinion. But a lot of them got locked up or had to go into exile. So I think it's a much more complicated bag than just, you know, Nicaragua's, you know, for example, a socialist country. You know, just take the coronavirus thing. Their doctors have had to go into exile because they contradicted the government statistics, which are hard to believe because they were having, you know, open air rallies without the face masks in the middle of the pandemic, like it was Bolsonaro's Brazil. And then they're saying they don't have many COVID cases. And the doctors are saying, oh, yes, we do. And then they get repressed. I have a problem with that. That doesn't mean the U.S. should be meddling in their elections. And so I agree with, you know, Gray Zone and Black Agenda Report on that. Beloved community, I like the Green Party candidates you featured on your podcast. I wonder if any of them won. Unfortunately, the ones we highlighted did not. Cam Gordon, who had been a city councilor for four terms in Minneapolis, lost. He came in third in the first round and was the last next to last candidate eliminated was ranked choice voting in his district. And I was sorry to see that. He was one of the candidates we had on. Connor Mulvaney in Pittsburgh, he got about a third of the vote running against an incumbent Democrat. And then we had a candidate from Cincinnati. I'm forgetting that name. So Logan somebody. Somebody will write it in the chat probably. He did not win. I think they raised good issues. And so I hope they will run again, because a lot of times you need to, you just can't do it in one campaign. So between now and the next election, I hope the new candidates build up their locals and get ready to go out there again. And Cam Gordon, he has a lot of experience. He was a very constructive city councilor in Minneapolis. And I don't know what his next move is, but I'm sure it will be impactful. So I don't think we've heard the last of Cam. Lee Showron, do you think Trump will be sentenced for all the crime he is convicted of or suspected of doing? No, I mean, this guy has done so much crime over his career that I don't think he's going to get caught on all the stuff he did. No way. Will he ever be sentenced for some of the crimes? I sure hope so. There are crimes. I think one of the best shots is down in Atlanta where, you know, he tried to get the Secretary of State to flip an election for him by finding votes that weren't there. There is a prosecutor, the district attorney in Fulton County, I believe, is going after him. We got the New York Attorney General in cooperation with the New York County District Attorney also going after crime for after Trump for financial crimes, basically tax fraud, insurance fraud, and bank fraud. So though there seems to be a lot of evidence for those crimes. So and then, you know, and this is where we get back to the Justice Department and that earlier question about being soft on these white supremacist insurrectionists. Trump was the leader of that. And I'm no lawyer. I don't know. There's got to be crimes against trying to overthrow the government. And whether Trump ever gets charged with that is going to be interesting to see. And, you know, I think he ought to be. So do I think he will be sentenced? I guess if I was betting, I'd say no. He's, you know, he's too rich, powerful, and he was a president. And it's going to be hard to win those cases. On the other hand, they got some really good cases against him. He's already basically in a campaign finance felony where his lawyer, Michael Cohen, went to prison. He was named as a co-conspirator and just not charged because he was president at the time. Well, he's not president now. So I think that's one of the crimes that New York is going after him on. So, boy, it seems hard for him to avoid all these crimes. So, if justice is served, he will spend some time behind bars. Brant J. Gill, Mr. Hawkins, what's your opinion on legalizing, taxing, and regulating all drugs? Heavy regulation of on opioids and other highly addictive chemicals, of course. Well, my opinion is, yeah, legalize, tax, and regulate all drugs. The problem is not the possession, say, of opioids. It's the addiction. And instead of scaring people from getting help with the threat of punishment in prison, it should be part of a, you know, Medicare for all, universal healthcare system where you can get help for drug addiction. And possession is like, it's not a crime. When we make it a crime, then you push people away from the treatment they need to get off of these opioids. And that is a real life or death issue in itself. I mean, we keep having growing numbers of people dying from opioid overdoses. Record number this last year during the COVID lockdown. So this is a serious problem. And by making the opioids illegal, and not providing universal access to drug treatment, we're basically killing people. Now, I forget the numbers, but it's like over 100,000, I believe, last year in this country died from opioid overdoses. That shouldn't be happening. It's, you know, our drug policies are just counterproductive. Rivaking 17, what is your opinion of tidal energy? I think basically it's good. It's kinetic energy powered by the gravity of the moon for the most part. You can also do wave energy while you're out there. The only drawbacks if they're poorly sighted, so they interfere with fish or navigation, but those are easy problems to solve. So yeah, I think there's a lot of potential in tidal energy, which can help people. If we have continental smart grids, then the tidal energy can help people, you know, in Wichita, Kansas, as well as New York City. Scout Trooper 164. Howie, do you think people that believe the world is becoming similar to Orwell's 1984 may be right, or perhaps exaggerated? I think they're right. I mean, with all the electronic surveillance we've got now, facial recognition and voice recognition and the capacity to keep the records and then cross, you know, correlate them. These are more powers than Big Brother and George Orwell's 1984 novel had. And countries are beginning to use them. Here in the United States, China's notorious with their social credit system. It's frightening. So we've got to do, one of the things we got to do that they have done in Europe is make our digital data, our information, our property, not the property of these platforms like Facebook. That's one way we can begin to protect ourselves and our privacy. But the surveillance capacities, I mean, Edward Snowden, you know, when he disclosed what the NSA was doing with all our communications, electronic communications, was frightening in itself. And they've got these supercomputers that just store all this stuff. George Orwell couldn't even imagine the capacities now the state has to surveil against us. So, yeah, I think Orwell sort of laid out what the problems could be. He just didn't foresee how sophisticated the technology of surveillance could become.
Thank you.
Need to get some liquid, too much talking. So Michael Shin asks, Mr. Hawkins, what do you think about getting young people to work for the Green Party by having an internship program? I think it's a great idea. Some of our locals do have internships. I've certainly had interns from high schools and colleges in Syracuse, New York. And that's something that locals should keep an eye out for, because a lot of times, you know, I don't know what it is in every state, but in I believe in New York, to graduate from high school, you have to do some kind of community work. And, the Green Party has counted for that for a large number of high school students. And then college students are, you know, they have different skills they're trying to develop or, you know, either bring and apply in helping us or learn from us. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's something that the Green Party should probably cultivate in a more organized way than we do. Violet at Content Boutique. Howie, I hope you write an autobiography and share your journey. Yeah, people have suggested that. I don't think you write it till you slow down, because I'm still on the journey. So you may have to wait for that one. But yeah, I... It'd more be an account of how I interacted with the times and what was going on. I mean, my personal stuff is not that interesting, but I think the times I went through and the movements I was involved in are and could be helpful to other people. So maybe someday. Vicky Corden, I heard batteries of electric vehicles leak into the environment. What do you think? Not sure what you're talking about leaking. I think after they're used up, then you've got, you know, heavy metals like lithium, and then the other metals used to just hold the battery together. And then if they are not recycled and reused, then they'll get into the waste stream and into the environment. And that's the problem. That's why zero waste is as much as is as important for the environment as zero greenhouse gas emissions. That's what we got to aim for, because we are, you know, it's not just the climate that is pushing the planetary boundaries. The plastic pollution in the ocean, the microplastics getting into the food chain, including into our bodies, with some of the chemicals that come out of the plastics are carcinogenic, mutagenic, in other words, change your DNA, which then can cause, you know, cancer. And then some of them have endocrine effects. In other words, they're like hormones and screw up our endocrine system. So, you know, it's a problem of, you know, our health, the health of other creatures in the environment. And then, you know, heavy metals, all these, I mean, like dealing with lead. I mean, this is something that really angers me. In 1972, the Surgeon General said we had an emergency. Kids had lead in their blood, and there's no, well, at that point, they had a safe level. Now they say there's no safe level of lead. So we got to do something about it. Well, the one thing we did do that was effective is we got lead out of gasoline, although that took a couple decades. Most of the lead that's getting into the kids that have acute lead poisoning is dust from lead paint. And housing stock that had the lead paint should have been remediated a long time ago, and it's not. I mean, there was a study, Reuters looked at all the lead data from county health systems around the country. And, you know, where I live, Syracuse is one of the worst. 40% of our kids were lead poisoned by the standard of the EPA at that time. It was, I think it was 5 micrograms per liter, something like that. It was much worse than Flint, Michigan, which everybody heard about. And then, of course, there's the lead pipes. Now, to build back better bill, there's money to replace lead pipes. That's good. There should be money in the housing under HUD to remediate housing, to get rid of the old lead paint. When that dust, you know, it's inhaled, kids get it on their fingers, they put their fingers in their mouth. That, from what I've seen, at least in Syracuse, is the biggest source of lead poisoning. So anyway, I'm saying those heavy metals, you know, they leak from batteries, but we're getting it from a lot of places. So we got to do, like I said, zero waste has got to be as important as zero emissions. Violet Content Boutique. Are lithium batteries safe for use in one's house? I was thinking about those portable batteries used for camping and such to use in the kitchen or to carry the air conditioner. As far as I know, yes. I don't think they leak any, you know, they don't leak gases. They just create an electric current. So, you know, unless they burn up or heat up or explode, I don't see, you know, that they're leaking any emissions that you need to be concerned about. Unless you can tell me something I don't know, I wouldn't worry about it. Scout Trooper 164, what are your favorite genres of music? Basically, 50s, 60s, early 70s, rhythm and blues, very early rock and roll, doo-wop, you know, the music I grew up on. So that's, those are my favorite genres. And I couldn't even tell you what the genres are since then, really. You know, it's a very generally. So, I mean, there's songs I hear that I like, but I when I want to go listen to music that I like, that's where I go to. Brant J. Gill, what do you think the United States should do about human rights violations around the globe, such as the Philippine drug war, which is essentially a genocide of over 30,000 drug users dead, or other situations like Muslim internment camps in China? Well, first thing we need to do is stop arming the human rights violators like the Saudis in Yemen. I don't know what our military relationship is in detail with the Philippines, but they are generally considered an ally. They did kick out our military bases when Marcos was overthrown. I think we've probably got a relationship with them now. I'm not sure on that. But, you know, at least diplomatically and certainly militarily, we should not support them. And then you have countries like China, which is seen as a geopolitical and military adversary. I think we should speak out against the internment of Muslims in China, but not link it to other issues we just got to deal with China about, like climate, like nuclear arms, like the world economy. And I think there are a lot of areas of cooperation. And, you know, I actually suggested it on this podcast. It's something I just sort of thought of, and I'm not sure it's realistic, but here it is. You know, when we talk with the Chinese, you know, when we criticize their human rights, they criticize our human rights. What if we said, yeah, you're right, we got human rights problems. Why don't we see who can fix them fastest and sort of have a agreement that, you know, we're going to do this with our human rights and they're going to do that with their human rights. Almost like an arms control agreement. We disarm on weapons. We disarm on violating human rights or stop doing it. That might be the most productive way to have a constructive conversation about human rights with China, which otherwise is going to just be defensive when we call them out for what they're doing. And they'll call us out for what we're doing. And we'll get defensive. And maybe the thing is we should say, can we cooperate in defending human rights in both countries? And have some public statement of what we're going to do that we can be held accountable to. VW Oklahoma, do you have any book recommendations? Yeah, I just finished a book. I've been reading so many books. I don't read novels very often, but I just read a novel by Dan Labatz about Trotsky in Tijuana. And the premise is he doesn't get assassinated in Mexico City in 1940 and lives for about another dozen years. So what would have happened then? The Trotsky, to Stalin, to the socialist movements around the world. And it's very interesting. And he paints these characters, some fictional, some people that actually did live in that period, like Stalin. I just finished that. And now I'm started on a book by a lawyer who was involved in the Mohawk Warriors took over some land in the Adirondacks and saying this is the first step toward taking New York back for the Mohawks. And they were armed and the state troopers wanted to go in there, but it was right after Attica. So the governor at the time said, hold off. We don't need another bloodbath. So after a few years, they negotiated an agreement where the Mohawks got another piece of land, not the piece of land that they originally took, which was basically a backwoods camp that the Rockefellers and I think the Kennedys Roosevelts used to camp at. And they got some other land where there's now, I think, a bingo hall and a casino, or at least a bingo hall. And then there's conflicts between the Mohawks and they consider themselves traditional. The federal government has their own structure for Indian government in New York. And then the traditionals have their divisions. So anyway, that's what I'm reading at the moment. And then I just got another book by Thomas Piketty, who I read a big, thick book of his last year called Capital and Ideology, I believe. He's the guy that wrote Capital in the 21st Century, dealing with inequality of wealth and how it's grown in the late 20th century and in the early 21st century. And now he's got a collection of essays. I think it's Thoughts on Socialism is the title. So when I finish this book about what happened, you know, to the Mohawks up there and how they negotiated that settlement in the 70s. I think that's the next book I'll pick up. So I'm telling you what I'm reading. You want recommendations. I don't know where to start. I mean, depends on what kind of analysis and history and politics you want to study. But I'll tell you two books that I mentioned this when the late Nikita Slade died, because we used to talk about these two books. One is Robert L. Allen's Black Awakening in Capitalist America. Came out in 1969. Not only is an analysis of the Black Liberation Movement and the response of the established power structure, it shows how the Ford Foundation went in, set up nonprofits to co-opt the movement, which foreshadowed what they've been doing to movements ever since. So if for no other reason, that book's worth reading for that. Another good book that Nikita and I used to talk about is Prisoners of the American Dream by Mike Davis, which basically studies American history, basically post-Civil War up to the, this book came out in the 80s, on why we don't have a labor party, a workers party, and just two business, big parties that are financed by big business. And it's, I think, a good history and analysis of how we got to this point. So, you know, in terms of just general background. And then the other thing is Robert L. Allen, the author of Black Awakening in Capitalist America, wrote another book called Reluctant Reformers, which goes through all the social reform movements in American history, from abolition and women's suffrage to the socialist and communist movements, the labor movement, the women's movement. And basically the thesis is racism within those movements divided those movements and weakened them. Even though the white people in those movements thought if we downplay the fight against racism, we'll have a broader movement. Of course, the broader movement they're talking about was exclusively white or almost all white. And that was a mistake. And that book is very enlightening. And it just came out with a new edition. And there's a review of it in the current issue of Monthly Review by Bill Fletcher Jr., which makes me think of that. So those two books by Robert L. Allen, Black Awakening in Capitalist America and Reluctant Reformers. I think if you want to understand the role of racism in our politics, those are the two books I would start with. Scout Trooper 164. With the nuclear arms treaty expired, what are your thoughts on what should be done to keep nuclear bombs from ever being used? Well, there are several nuclear arms treaties that expired or we withdrew from. There was the last one was the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Agreement, which both the U.S. and Russia said, we're out of here. There was an anti-ballistic missile treaty that the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from under Bush. The Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, SALT II, was renewed between Biden and Putin, and that's under discussion. That's good because Trump, you know, could have done that and was the problem there, I think, is he just, the people he appointed were so incompetent, they didn't even know what they were doing. The Russians are like scratching their head. What are we going to do with these people? So they never really got to an agreement. So, you know, at least Biden did that. Although Biden is going full speed ahead with the nuclear modernization program. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is still in effect. And, you know, that has three parts. One is we want to prevent nukes from going to new countries. Second part is we will promote the so-called peaceful atom, which basically transfers the technology to make weapons to these countries, which is why Saudi Arabia wants help with nuclear power. And Iran is, you know, using nuclear power to get the knowledge. And we've seen other countries use nuclear power to get the knowledge. Like North Korea, like Israel, Pakistan, and India. So, and then the third part of it was to negotiate complete and mutual nuclear disarmament. And that part was basically ignored by the nuclear powers, except the United States and the former Soviet Union, when Reagan and Gorbachev agreed to major nuclear weapons reductions, and even broached the subject of complete nuclear disarmament. And, you know, from what I've read, Reagan in his heart wanted to do that. Gorbachev was ready to do that, but Reagan's aides wouldn't let him go that far. But, you know, that gives me hope that we could actually do it. So what we need to do now, I think, is the United States needs to take some unilateral peace initiatives, like declare no first use. We will not use nuclear weapons except as a deterrent, rather than saying, as we do now, saying we reserve the right to use them first. That would reduce tensions. We have more nukes than we need for a credible deterrent. We could unilaterally disarm down to a credible deterrent. And on the basis of those initiatives, those peace initiatives, we could go to the other nuclear powers and say, you know, we're not going to be a global military empire anymore. We're not going to use nuclear weapons as we have long after Nagasaki. You know, when we say all options are on the table when we're talking to Iran, that includes nukes. It's like, you know, the mugger coming up to you, putting a gun to your head, saying, give me all your money and all my options are on the table. In other words, he could blow that, pull that trigger and blow your brains out. So we've used nuclear weapons that way many times since we dropped that bomb on, those two bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So we should go to the other nuclear powers, say, we've cut our nukes. We pledge no first use. We're not going to use them, you know, as a way to bully other countries. Now we want to talk to you about complete and mutual nuclear disarmament under the terms of the new Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which has been ratified by over 50 countries, with more coming on every month. And it was negotiated without the nine nuclear powers. So I think the United States could take the lead, the initiative, to basically get the nuclear powers talking about complete and mutual nuclear disarmament under the terms of that treaty. I think that's what we need to aim at. And that's how we're going to avoid nuclear war. So our hour is up. And this place is still buzzing. People are coming in and out. And I still got some more talks here, but I'm sorry. We got our weeks mixed up, but Brian Figaro will be on the podcast next week. Talk about, you know, what's going on with the Caribbean community and politics and
take care.
Where we need to go from here.
Take care.
Yeah, that's an officer from the United Food and Commercial Workers just walked by. So there's a lot going on here, and Brian will have a lot to say next week. So, oh, she's giving me her card. Thank you. See, UFCW. There you go. Nice to meet you. So, what can I say to wrap up? Well, watch out this week. They say they're going to pass Build Back Better. I would bet against it because I think Manchin is going to throw some objections out that the House will want to deal with before they pass it. I think, or that may be a signal to the conservative House Democrats to wait. They've already given themselves an out. They want to see what the Congressional Budget Office score is on the whole program. If they hold to that, we're going to wait. If it does pass, it's still got to get through the Senate. So even at the best time schedule, it's going to be, you know, like the end of the month, Thanksgiving or later, if it ever gets passed again. I'm afraid the progressives, they gave away all their leverage by compromising. The last compromise they did was say, we will, they said I can come in here. I want to show those of you that didn't come here when I opened up, you know, just what they got on the wall here. But, you know, besides the legal aid and the podcast and the radio and everything, they've got, now I can't see if you can see. Okay, you can see these are just some of the publications they do. Concerned Americans for Racial Equality, Immigrants Journal, Caribbean American Weekly. And then they got Workers' World Today, no relation to the Workers' World Party. This is right here in the Brooklyn community. And this is something on how to start a union. So this is the kind of community centers we should have all over, helping our people. So I've enjoyed being here. And sorry, we couldn't have Brian Figueroa's central figure here on this, you know, for this podcast, but we'll have him next week. And so, yeah, like I said, let's see what happens with Build Back Better this week. And we just came out of the elections. We need to get ready for the next ones. I mean, here in New York, we got a monster job getting back on the ballot. And every state is different. It's one of the problems in this country. We don't have any federal standards for elections, whether it's ballot access or voting rights. The Supreme Court really knocked down most of the useful provisions of the Voting Rights Act. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. So with that, I don't want to keep you all so long. Thanks for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next week. Love.